Municipal judges, we have to remember that this is under the old Constitution, were not full-time judicial officers. Most of them served part-time. They weren't prevented from practicing law. They were sort of descendants of the old justice of the peace system. And I gather that what Horace Gilmore was doing on behalf of the circuit court was attempting to somewhat professionalize these people or upgrade them or enhance their public image or whatever. Well, Harry Dingaman came in, and he held this up at when we came to new business in the meeting, and he said, look at this. He said, look what our circuit court judges are doing in this county. He said, they're putting robes on these part-time municipal judges out there, and they're making as though these are important judicial officers and so forth. And here we are, full-time judges in the Common Pleas Court, right downstairs from these people, and these circuit court judges, the high and mighty. He says, and what do they do for us? Why, the first time we turn our backs, they cut our balls off. and I'm sitting there as a young lawyer now, a young judge, and expecting that I'm going to be surrounded here with the dignity of the bench. And I listen to this tirade, which first of all was somewhat amusing to me, because it seemed to me that if one was going to surgically remove somebody's testicles, they wouldn't do it from the back, you know. So in any case, that was an experience. I have to back off and tell you that I seem to have had a lot of experiences in my life with judges not acting the way I expected them to. When Polly and I were engaged back in 1950, I think it was, or before we were engaged, I guess, we were going to the light opera at the Masonic Temple. We stopped at the Sheraton Cadillac for a drink at the old motor bar. And while we were sitting there, in came this little white-haired man, and he staggered around the room, and he pinched the ladies on the cheek, and he interrupted people at the bar, and he was making a fool of himself. And we kind of looked over and giggled about him a little bit, and then went on with our looking into each other's eyes in our conversation. And suddenly I felt this slam on the top of my head, and I turned around. Here's this little guy, and he's got a pair of rubbers in his hand with which he's just struck me on top of my head. So I get up from my chair, and I look at him, and he's probably a foot shorter than I am anyway, and or 8 inches shorter. And I said, I beg your pardon. He looks up at me, and he says, take off your glasses. Well, I wasn't wearing any glasses. And so about that moment, I forget what I may have said or done, but before I was able to hit him, the bouncers came in, or the waiters came in, grabbed him and hustled him out, and then the maitre d' came over and apologized and sent us a drink and so forth. Well, minutes later, a lady came over from the next table, and she said, you know who that was, don't you? And I said, no. She said, that was Vincent Brennan, the circuit judge. And, you know, he was quite a notorious guy. Well, of course, here I was, a law school student, and with the name of Brennan. And as I told you yesterday, later on, I had gone to see old Vincent Brennan, or John V. Brennan, who was a very decent and honorable, upright public servant. But old Vincent was a lush of the first order by the time I came on the scene. And that was somewhat disillusioning. Anyway, get back to my story about human governance, which this is a story about my concept of human governance, because you asked me about the method in which we select the Chief Justice. And while this may seem somewhat convoluted and off the point, I want to stay with it. After 2 years on the Common Pleas Court, I was promoted to the Circuit Court by Governor Romney, and then I said to myself, now I'm going to be with the real judges. Now I'm going to be with the people whose counsels will be conducted with dignity and decorum, and I better be on my toes. So now the circuit judges, unlike the Common Pleas Court judges, did not meet in furtive little back hallway midday meetings. They met in a hotel over dinner. And so this was great. We went and had a few drinks and got around the dinner table, and there were 20 circuit court judges at the time, and I would say most, if not all of them, were there. And after a couple of drinks and some conviviality, the meeting was called to order by then presiding judge Thomas Murphy. And Tommy Murphy was a very delightful and warm and fuzzy gentleman who had been presiding judge for a number of years at that point, since I think Chet O'Hara had passed along. But by this time, everybody's had a few pops, and so the conversation is loud, and there people are interrupting one another, and you may have remembered Lila Neuenfeld, who was on the bench at that time. Lila was a female lawyer in days before female lawyers were what they are today. I mean, she obviously went to law school when she was the only woman in the class, and survived and succeeded in the law as a lawyer and a judge, sort of against the grain of the day. Well, she was a tough gal, and she could cuss with the boys and drink with the boys too. There were some stories about that, but I can remember, you know, Carl Weideman, "God damn it, Lila, will you shut up?" and on, and they're all interrupting each other. And I came away from that meeting thinking to myself, well, my goodness, you know, it doesn't seem to make any difference where you go. The councils are all conducted about the same. Well, then, you know, three more years pass, and I'm elected to the Michigan Supreme Court, and now I'm going to sit around a table with seven jurists of absolute eminence who are a statewide political base. Former governors, former attorney generals, people of great prominence, and I'm thinking to myself, now I better be ready for the real high class operation. And I discovered that tempers are tempers, that people are rude to one another in even that circumstance. Stories you may have heard from others about this happened before I got there. Otis Smith pounding the table and breaking the glass on the table at one point in time. I saw through the years justices get up and walk out of the room in a fit of pique over something that was said or done. I became of the opinion that probably if you were to sit in the highest councils of humanity, the Security Council of the United Nations or wherever, expecting it to be so dignified they'd all be speaking in French, you know, they'd be cussing at each other. And they would be, beset by all of the human emotions and foibles that we all suffer around our own dinner tables, and that's just an observation. I believe that in all human affairs, there is leadership. Leadership is a natural instinct of human beings. Some people have it in greater quantity than others. Everybody seeks it, and we have an innate, inherent need and urge to have leaders. We give the responsibility to do jobs to the chairman of the committee. We delegate authority. We do that instinctively in our own lives, to our children, and so forth. So I believe that the idea that if you put any 12 people on a desert island, they're going to organize. They're going pretty soon. You're going to have a chairman and a vice chairman and secretary and treasurer.
Excuse me. Did you call Mr. Riley from here?
No, from my car.